On this. All right. Oh, thank you. I forgot. There we go. Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavidyan Karavavahai Tejasvinavati Tamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Chaitanyam Sarvagam Sarvam Sarvaguhashayam Yat sarva vishayatitam tasmai sarva vide namaha. Oh my, very good. Nice to see you all. Welcome. And good. Welcome also to the many students attending this class online. We come to another nice sequence of verses here in chapter 18, where Shankaracharya seems to be using this pratibimbavada, this mirror metaphor. He's trying to squeeze everything out of it that he can, really. He is doing a wonderful job in applying this metaphor, and we'll see further. So far, he has applied the metaphor, actually, just to introduce this first verse today. Mostly, this metaphor that the mind reflects consciousness, like a mirror reflects your face, he's applied that to our ordinary experiences, waking state experiences, and we can presume that those would apply also to dream state experiences, giving us the leading question, begging the question, what about deep sleep? How does that mirror metaphor work in explaining our experience of deep sleep? And that is what we see next. Push the right things here. Okay. Is my microphone on? It's on. Is it not loud enough, maybe? Okay. Test 111. 111. 111. 111. Test, 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 test. That's a little too loud now. Test, test, test. Test, test, test. Test, test, test. How is that? Is that better? Okay. Thank you. All right. Nadrakshamaham. Nadrakshamahamiti. Nadrakshamahamiti. Why am I blinking out on the nadrakshama asmin nadrakshamahamit? Oh, that's why. There's a Sunday missing. Yeah, it's a typo. You can't chant it like this. Nadrakshamahim. Nadrakshamahamit yasmin, nadrakshamahamit yasmin, sushupte, sushupte nyanmanagapi, sushupte nyanmanagapi, navarayati trishtim swam, navarayati trishtim swam, prat Pratyayam tu nishedhati, pratyayam tu nishedhati. So, asmin sushupte, in the state of deep sleep, right? Jagrat, swapna, sushupti, sushupte, in the state of deep sleep. And what is your experience in the state of deep sleep? Na adraksham. Aham, I. Na adraksham, it's a past tense verb. I saw nothing. Iti, thus is your experience in deep sleep, an experience of nothing. Now, there are two ways of interpreting that experience, and the two ways are possible. One way is you ceased to be the observer of your mind, sakshi. Sakshi ceases to exist in a state of deep sleep. That's a logical explanation, is it not? No, you. Do you know what? That shows how. Sorry to make a point here. There's a problem if you get indoctrinated into the teachings of Advaita Vedanta and you take it as a belief system. So no. Sakshi can't possibly disappear in deep sleep. We have to keep our minds open here to follow Shankara's arguments. This is not a matter of belief. And I'm afraid if I've indoctrinated you into Advaitic beliefs, I've made a mistake. This is not a matter of indoctrination. This is not a matter of belief. We have to consider all the possibilities. And it indeed is a logical possibility that your consciousness blinks off in deep sleep, which is why when you wake up again and your consciousness blinks on, you have this experience, na adraksham aham. That is a logical possibility. Do not refute it. And this is actually very important for our Buddhist friends. Two major schools of Buddhism are based on this. If you reject it out of hand, you've rejected half of Buddhism. There are a lot of people who would take offense to that. So you get my point, right? This is not a matter of belief. I mean, you've heard this so many times that your consciousness continues unabated in deep sleep, and you've believed it. And that's a problem. Because it's not a matter of belief, this is a truth to be understood. So with that in mind, let's continue. So it is indeed a logical possibility that your consciousness blinks off when you in deep sleep. I've used a silly metaphor like the light bulb in your refrigerator. Close the door and it goes off. Of course, it's a silly and incorrect metaphor, but it's just nice to see that. But there's another possibility. And I've joked with you on this light bulb thing. How do you know the light bulb goes off? It's a presumption. Unless you are inside the refrigerator and somebody shuts you in there, it's a presumption on your part that the light bulb goes off. So, which shows that it's not the only way of explaining the light bulb. It's not the only way of explaining the experience of deep sleep. The other way of explaining deep sleep, as you know very, very well, is consciousness continues without change, but there is nothing to be observed in deep sleep. An observer without an observed. Consciousness without an object. Sakshi without sakshya is the correct term for that. So that's the other possibility. Now, these, logically speaking, just based on simple logic, both of these are equally possible. Until we explore it a little further, we'll find out why they're not equally possible. But let's begin at this point. They are both adequate explanations of the experience of deep sleep. But now we have an opportunity to apply our mirror drishtanta. So I've explained this in many other ways before, so I'm not going to repeat any of those ways. But let's explain that experience with the mirror drishtanta, since that's our context. So suppose you're looking at a mirror, and the mirror is quite close to your face, so that all you see in the mirror is your face. Which means you don't see the edge of the mirror. You get the idea. You only see your face. Suddenly, the face goes away. That would be weird, wouldn't it? Think about it. This is a thought experiment. And like my guru used to call this open eye meditation. So you're looking at this mirror and suddenly gone. How to explain that experience? Well, there's two explanations. One is the mirror, you dropped it. The mirror went away. That's one adequate way of explaining the fact that you don't see your face. The other explanation, of course, is that your head went away. Right? There are two possibilities, just as in the refrigerator example and everything else. So one possibility is the mirror went away. The other possibility is your head went away. When we put it in those terms, would you consider both of those possibilities equally likely? They're both possible. Logically speaking, they're both possible. But realistically speaking, one is much more likely than the other. You know, the to posit that your head went away. And this is a good way then to analyze these two possibilities in explaining the experience of deep sleep. Again, both possibilities are logically there, don't deny. But one is much more likely than the other. And that is that consciousness remains. To put it in very concrete terms, you are as conscious in deep sleep as you are right now. And Shankara goes on to say, Anyat managapi navarayati drishtam swam. In deep sleep, anyat managapi na managapi. We have to make the na go to managapi. Anyat na managapi. Not even a little bit. Swam drishtam, swam drishtam, your own consciousness, varayati, decreases. In deep sleep, your consciousness doesn't decrease by even a tiny bit, namanagapi. You remain as conscious in deep sleep as you do in right now, as you are right now. And to apply our mirror drishtanta in this situation, consider this. Every moment you are aware of what's happening in your mind. All day long, every moment, you're aware of what's happening in your mind. Then, when you're dreaming, every moment, you're aware of what's happening in your mind. That establishes a continuity of consciousness, leading to the extension. Now, please bear in mind, this is not a proof. I'm going to give you two ways to establish the fact that consciousness does not disappear in deep sleep. It continues in deep sleep. Neither of these are absolute proofs, and I'll explain why that's an important distinction in just a moment. So in terms of this, my current example, you're aware of every tiny thing that happens in your mind in waking state and deep sleep. You've been awake of thousands and millions of mental events, and then you stop being aware of anything. That looks a little illogical because you have so much continuity during waking and dream, and then that suddenly stops. The metaphor I've used, instead of the mirror metaphor, the one I prefer to use is, you know, because your head falling, your head disappearing is a little bit strange to use that mirror metaphor, but you've probably heard me use the dark closet metaphor. You go into your closet, dark closet, you see nothing. Two ways of explaining it. You went blind the moment you walked into the closet. That's a perfectly logical explanation. You went blind. Or you have the power of sight, but there's nothing you can see in the dark closet. I like that metaphor because it is so illogical to imagine that you go blind when you go into the closet and you regain your power of sight when you come out. But it is a logical possibility. There's such a thing as hysterical blindness, where some kind of trauma will make you lose your sight. So, I mean, it's not a practical possibility, it's a theoretical possibility that you have this traumatic hysterical blindness when you're in the closet and then it goes away when you come out. The point I'm making is, even though my explanation is reasonable, it's not an absolute proof. Do you see my point? There is a tiny, tiny possibility that you can make another argument, this hysterical blindness. Same thing with the mirror and the head. Maybe your head disappeared. That is pretty silly option, but doesn't make much sense. Actually, better to apply it to this moment-by-moment thing. You've been aware of thousands and thousands of moments of experience through the day, giving you that sense of continuity, and then abruptly, that continuity gets broken. So, again, the two possibilities. The continuity was broken either because in deep sleep there's nothing to be seen, or in deep sleep, you don't observe. You cease to be the observer. So here we are using yukti, anubhava and yukti. We come back to this shruti yukti anubhava again and again. And it's so important because in this verse, we're using anubhava, your experience in deep sleep, and analyzing it with the use of yukti. And what it shows, using the mirror drishtanta or the dark closet drishtanta, is it's unreasonable that you become blind temporarily in the dark closet. It's unreasonable that your consciousness blinks off in deep sleep. Both of these positions are unreasonable, but the yukti is not a solid proof because we can pick at it and we can design some fanciful possibility, which is extremely unlikely, but it shows the fact that anubhava and yukti are not enough. If anubhava and yukti were enough, then Buddhism would be okay. We could all become Buddhists. Because Buddhism has a very skillful development of anubhava experience and yukti. But we've admitted, and something the Buddhists can't do, we admit when we use anubhava and yukti, we admit their limitations. We don't insist on the infallibility of anubhava and yukti. Doesn't that sound like a good position to take? Very wise position to accept the fact that we can make mistakes, that our intellects are limited, and we need some assistance. If we want to discover an absolute truth or a fundamental reality, we should be ready to admit anubhava and yukti are not enough, which is why in the very next verse, Shankara brings us shruti. This is the missing link, so to speak, the missing bit. And this Shruti, let's see the verse and then we'll discuss it further. Swayam Jyotirnahi Drashtur. Swayam Jyotirnahi Drashtur. Ityevam Samvidostitam. Ityevam Samvidostitam. Kautastyam Chatatastasyaha. Kautastyam Chatatastasyaha. Pratyayasya Chaluptatam. Pratyayasya Chaluptatam. So he starts giving examples from Shruti. Just take the first one. Swayam Jyotihi. Self-shining. Jyotihi, a light, which is Swayam Jyoti, which is a self-shining light. And the common metaphor is the sun is Swayam Jyoti, unlike the moon, which reflects the light of the sun. And in this metaphor, consciousness is Swayam Jyoti, like the sun. It doesn't require anything else to shine. It is shining by its fundamental nature. And the sun may appear to go off. The metaphor for deep sleep is night. Nighttime, what happens to the sun? The answer to that question is nothing. The sun still shines. Does it become a little bit dimmer at night? Namanagapi varayati. Not even a little bit does the sun become dimmer at night. So this is a metaphor to describe Swayam Jyotihi Chaitanya, consciousness, which is self-shining. And since it's self-shining means shining by its very nature, its very nature is to shine, and the nature of something doesn't change unless you do something to change it. So this pot is what it is unless you do something to change it. It continues to be pot. If you leave it alone, it continues to be pot. If you leave the sun alone, it continues to shine. Because it's the nature of the sun to shine. It's the nature of consciousness to illumine. And it's a huge discussion. We're not going to get into it. You can't do anything to consciousness because it's a different order of reality. Let us set that aside. That's really not our topic here. So, sun continues to shine. Consciousness continues to illumine. Here we bring in Shruti. Now, is this Shruti, is it a matter of belief? Well, if we didn't have Anubhava and Yukti, it would be. Scripture says consciousness is Swayam Jyoti. Okay. You say, Haji. Sorry, I don't mean to make fun of anyone. But that's a typical Indian response. So, that's belief. And as I said so powerfully before, making that point, this is not a matter of belief. A way of understanding it is this. If we admit that Anubhava and Yukti themselves are inadequate and we need some help, that help is going to come from outside of ourselves. We, as limited human beings, lack some special capacity to go beyond the normal human experience. On the other hand, the ancient rishis seem to possess some special capacity to go beyond the normal human activity. That's what allowed the rishis to make these discoveries, including the discovery that consciousness is Swayam Jyotihi. It is shining by nature. It is unchanging. We'll come to unchanging shortly. And so we go outside of ourselves to draw on. And here's another. So we draw on the teachings of the ancient rishis, which then come into our scriptures, and there we have Shruti. There's another argument why this is not a matter of belief. So this is the first argument says it would be a belief if we set aside our Shruti and Yukti, and secondly we admit that Shruti and Yukti are not adequate anyway, so we have no choice, right? We have no choice but to go for something more outside. And there's one more factor, though, that helps get us out of this idea that we just believe what the scriptures say. And that is, that what scripture says is a matter of belief is true for most subject matters. When the scripture says this ritual has this result, that's completely a matter of belief. When a scripture says that you can go to this kind of heavenly domain, that is absolutely a matter of belief. There's no way about it. But when the scripture says consciousness is shining by nature and therefore unchanging, that particular revelation falls into a different category. And for two reasons. This is a little bit more than I thought it was when I started on this. So look at the difference. The Shruti reveals going to heaven. The Shruti reveals the nature of consciousness. And already you understand these are two very different subject matters. Why are they so different? Well, first of all, can you confirm right now whether or not heaven exists or not? You have no way of confirming. But right now, can you confirm that consciousness is unchanging, self-shining? If you're enlightened, yes. Suppose you're not enlightened. Even then, the ancient rishis were enlightened. So if you consider the rishi's revelation that consciousness is self-shining, that revelation is based on the rishi's experience. We call that vidvat anubhava, the experience of an enlightened person. So now, how can you call that a matter of belief? If it is verifiable, so a belief is not verifiable. But here, a belief in heaven is not verifiable. But that your consciousness is unchanging and self-shining, that is verifiable. If you were enlightened right now, you would verify that fact. And secondly, it's not purely a matter of belief, because for the ancient rishi who revealed it, it was their personal experience. So for both of these reasons, we have to take that statement out of the realm of belief. Yes, it's true. It's a belief for most people. Most Hindus would talk about the inner divinity as an eternal reality. That's excellent. That's good. But it's a matter of belief. Our goal is not to believe something here. Our goal is to gain knowledge. Okay. So what I probably went on too long on that point, but it's a really important point. To know that, to understand that Shruti and Yukti are inadequate, we need the help of Shruti, but we use Shruti not as a source of belief. We use it as the third leg of a table. Shruti Yukti Anubhava. And further, we know that what the Shruti reveals about consciousness was based on the experience of an enlightened person, so not a matter of belief. So first example, Swayam Jyotihi comes from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And then another example he gives, Shankara gives, from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Nahi Drashtur. And then we have to add in the rest. Also from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Nahi Drashtuhu Drishtehe Viparilopaha Vidyate. So Shankara just gives the first couple of words because you know the rest of it, right? Even I have to read down here, so that's okay. You don't have to remember all this stuff. In fact, this is going to be a satsang question. Does being enlightened depend on memory? If it does, I'm in trouble. We're all in trouble. Okay. Drashtr is the noun, agent noun, seer, observer, consciousness, sakshi. Drashtr in the genitive case becomes drashtuhu for the seer. Drashtuhu. Drashtuhu, of the seer, of the observer. Drishtehe is the word drishti, seeing, consciousness. Drishtehe, of seeing, na viparilopaha vidyate, na vidyate, there is no viparilopaha, which is a fancy word for it doesn't go away. For the sight of the seer, there is no going away. That's what it means. For the sight, the literal meaning. Nahi drashtuhu drishtehe viparilopaha vidyate. For the sight of the seer, there is no going away. For the consciousness of the, now comes a paraphrase, for the consciousness of the sakshi, there is no interruption. So for the consciousness of the sakshi, there is no interruption in the state of deep sleep, is the context. So this is what we have. So iti evam, thus, based on the statements of scripture. So first, we give benefit of doubt to scripture. Again, we're not believing in scripture because we're not taking it separately without anubhava and yukti. Mere belief is just to take scripture along. We don't do that. So we take scripture along with anubhava and yukti iti evam, and thus samvidaha astitam, and thus the samvit is another word for consciousness. Samvit. Samvidaha astitam. For the existence of consciousness, that iti evam is a big therefore. So therefore, Shankara concludes, samvidaha astitam, the existence of, for the existence of consciousness, there is such a thing as kautasthyam. Kautasthyam means permanence. Comes from kutastha. Kuta is anvil. So that which is kutastha, that which is unchanging like an anvil. And then it forms this abstract noun, kautasthyam. The state of being unchanging like an anvil, meaning permanent. It's simply unchanging. That's the word we're after. Unchanging. So just once again, when we were using these metaphors, like going into the closet, like seeing, not seeing anything in the mirror, those are metaphors, right? And as we've discussed, and as Shankara himself said several verses ago, there's no such thing as a perfect metaphor. So in using yukti, we're constantly using metaphors. So any metaphor we use, we have to admit there might be a unique case or situation in which it can be proven wrong. That's the very nature of metaphor. So here, Shankara points out that kautasthyam, the unchangeable nature of consciousness, can only be definitively understood with the help of Scripture. That's his point. So when we bring in the help of Scripture, the weakness, any weakness that you might find in anubhava and yukti, that weakness is patched up by the shruti. Notice every one of the three has weaknesses. Anubhava is unreliable, right? You see the sun going down. It doesn't go down. Yukti is unreliable. In the closet, there are two possibilities. You went blind or there's nothing to see. So yukti is unreliable. Shruti is unreliable. How do you know the rishi who said that consciousness is unchanging, how do you know he wasn't high on drugs? You know, the point I'm making is that if you take any one of these three individually, it doesn't work. But when you take all the three of them together, we're back to the table example. A table that has one leg is not very stable. A table that has two legs is not stable. But when that table has three legs, it becomes stable. So any one of these three individually is insufficient. Taking the three together, we have a full teaching. So from this, we know that consciousness has kautasthyam. It is absolutely unchanging, which means it remains the same in deep sleep. Tathacha, and also tasyaha pratyayasya cha luptatam. This luptatam is the opposite of viparilopa, navviparilopa. So he says there is lopa. Luptatam means loss. There is lopa, there is interruption, there is cessation of what? Pratyayasya, what you observe, experience. So you observe all these experiences in the waking state, you observe all these experiences in the dream state, and then in deep sleep, you observe the absence of experience. That's what he's saying. It is luptatam, the absence, pratyayasya, of mental events. So in deep sleep, you observe, but what is observed is not the presence of mental events, but rather the absence of mental events. I think I'll leave that part out. All right. This verse has one more line, so let's see that last line. Swayameva bravichastram, swayameva bravichastram, pratyayavagati prataka, pratyayavagati prataka. Swayameva shastram abravit, shastram, scripture, swayameva, itself, abravit, it says. What does it say? That pratyaya and avagati, pratyaya, experience, we just saw that, the mental events. Avagati is the ascertainment, literally, the ascertainment of experience. So here in this context, it means consciousness. So pratyaya, mental objects, and avagati, it becomes long because it's a dual. So both consciousness and experience are pratak, separate. We have to discern the difference between observer and observed, between consciousness and mental activities, and we do this with the help of Shastra. Again, if it was only Shastra, we would all be believers, true believers. And that term gets used a lot. But here, our goal is not to be true believers. Our goal, actually, just to introduce the next verse, we can see one more in the time remaining. We'll try this. What is our goal? Is our goal, this is a trick question, is our goal to discern the difference between consciousness, which is an unchanging fundamental reality, to discern the difference between consciousness and experience, mind, mental events, which are not fundamental reality. Consciousness is unchanging. Fundamental reality, that which is not fundamental, is constantly changing. So, this is what Shankara has been developing, not just in the last few verses, but the whole Pratibimbavada, the whole mirror drishtanta, is meant to show this truth. The truth that consciousness is an unchanging fundamental reality, utterly unlike everything else. Trick question. Is understanding that our goal? John, give you just a moment to think about it, because it's tricky. What is our goal? I thought our goal was moksha. And moksha in the sense of freedom from suffering. Right? So the point is, and that Shankara is going to recognize for us in the next verse, is that this is a very philosophical presentation of a fundamental truth. Which means we can wonder, well, in American English, so what? Consciousness is an unchanging fundamental reality. Okay. So what? Is baat mein fayda kya hai? What do you get out of it? So these are important questions to ask, and you'll see in the next verse, Shankara anticipates this question. He says, Aham shabdasya yanishta, aham shabdasya yanishta, jyotishi pratyagatmani, jyotishi pratyagatmani, saivokta sarasityevam, saivokta sarasityevam, phalam tatra vimuktata, phalam tatra vimuktata. So far we're talking about, in the second line, Jyotishi Pratyagatmani, in the locative case. We're talking about Vishaya Saptami. We're talking about Pratyagatma, the inner self, your true nature, being Jyoti. Jyotis is the undeclined form. Light, the light of consciousness. We're talking about the light of consciousness. So, what is the benefit of knowing what the light of consciousness is? How does it help us to know that consciousness is an unchanging fundamental reality? Well, the benefit does... Let's be clear. To know that consciousness is an unchanging fundamental reality, to know that as a fact, as a philosophical fact, benefits you not at all. I know that consciousness is an unchanging fundamental reality. So what? So that now the question becomes absolutely valid. what is the benefit of that philosophical knowledge, of understanding that concept? The benefit is, I don't know what that, there's no significant benefit at all, unless you're in love with philosophy and you've discovered this new idea. The benefit only comes not when you understand that consciousness is an unchanging fundamental reality, but when you understand that I am that consciousness, which is a fundamental reality. That's a huge step, right? It's not hard to understand the concept that consciousness is a fundamental reality, but there's no fruit. Moksha doesn't occur with that understanding. Moksha occurs with the further understanding that I am that consciousness. Let me rephrase it. The concept is, consciousness is a fundamental unchanging reality, but the realization that gives moksha is, I am that consciousness. Look down at the third line. Sadasi iti. Sadasi. You are that tatvamasi is referring to. Or aham brahmasmi. These mahavakyas are crucial in connecting you to that profound philosophical truth. So consciousness as an unchanging fundamental reality is a profound fundamental truth, but unless you see its relevance in your life and your experience, there's no benefit. Certainly no moksha. So moksha comes when you personally recognize the implication of that profound philosophical truth. The consciousness, which is an unchanging reality, is me. I am that consciousness. Now, notice I've used the word I. I is a pronoun. And that's what Shankara begins with. He says, aham shabdasya, for the pronoun I, ya nishtha. Here nishtha means it's referent. Every pronoun has a referent. What does I refer to? Well, most of the time, I refers to body, mind, roles, everything else. But when the referent for I gets switched, instead of saying, I am the one who walked into this room an hour ago and sat down in this chair and has been teaching, to shift the I from that referent to Jyotishi Pratyagatmani. I am that unchanging light of consciousness. That's when the benefit is gained. When, look at that. The benefit, well, we're going to talk about this much more in the, actually we'll talk about it a little bit right now. We keep saying that enlightenment is knowledge, enlightenment is knowledge, enlightenment is knowledge. But applied knowledge. So let's go back to the distinction we've made before between information and self-knowledge. So when we say enlightenment is knowledge, it's not information, right? Consciousness is an unchanging fundamental reality. That's information, isn't it? It is. Consciousness is an unchanging fundamental reality, is a concept. It is information. When we say enlightenment is a result of knowledge, we should perhaps add the word self-knowledge. The kind of knowledge that's capable of shifting the pronoun I to shift its referent. Is referent the right word? I think so. From shifting the referent, that which a pronoun refers to, I think is called referent, to shifting its referent from body and mind and everything else, to shift it to what you truly are, fundamental reality consciousness. So notice, a concept doesn't make that shift occur. To make that shift occur, the concept is not enough. What is missing? The connection. Where does the connection come from? Mahavakya. That's it. I am that. Aham Brahmasmi. Tat Tvam Asi. You are that. Prajnanam Brahma. The consciousness which you are is that fundamental reality. I am Atma Brahma. This is the fourth of the four Mahavakyas we usually quote. So, I am Atma Brahma. This consciousness, which is my nature, is Brahman, is that unchanging fundamental reality. Notice, in each case, the Mahavakya doesn't tell you what consciousness is. That's what everything else is required. If Vedanta were only the Mahavakya, why would you need a whole text like Upadesha Savasri? You don't need all that. But you do need all that to understand that consciousness is an unchanging fundamental reality. But that won't give you moksha. So you need all of that plus one. Plus what? Mahavakya. And that's what he says in the second half here. He says, Sa eva ukta, and that connection, that which makes I, going back to the first half, that which shifts the referent of the pronoun I, that shifts it from referring to the body and mind and shifts it to referring to your true nature as consciousness. Sa eva ukta. That shift is what is said by the Mahavakya, like sat asi, like tat tvam asi, like aham brahmasmi. So you need that Mahavakya to convert. I want to use that word. A red flag goes up in my mind because Pujya Swami Dayananda had some reservations about that word. So anyway, I'm just checking to make sure it's okay. I think it's okay in this context. To convert that concept into a personal reality. That is an absolutely correct statement. The Mahavakya is that which converts this profound philosophical concept, consciousness as an unchanging fundamental reality, it gets converted into a personal reality by means of the Mahavakya. And tatra, then, comes the palam, the fruit of his teachings. And the fruit of this teaching is vimuktata, liberation, freedom, moksha. And again, freedom from suffering now and freedom from rebirth, if there is any such thing, but freedom from suffering now. So this idea of the Mahavakya being that which converts a powerful philosophical concept, converts it into a personal reality, giving rise to moksha, is a topic we're going to go more deeply into in the next couple of verses. So this is a really good place to conclude our class today. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha, sarve Sarve santu niramayaha, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritangamaya. Om Shanti 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 Om Tat Sat.
Good. All right.